The Arkenstone, the super precious jewel at the heart of the mountain that Thorin covets and Bilbo finds, is an old English word that is Eorklanstan, that's spelled E-O-R-C-L-A-N. That looks foreign, it looks weird, it's hard to read, but Tolkien realized when he translates it into a modern English form, Arkenstone, it looks very normal. Likewise, the Forest of Mirkwood. In Old Norse, this is Myrkvirthr, which again looks weird on the page. Mirkwood makes complete sense. Tolkien also figured out this technique of alluding to things as if everybody knew what they were without having to describe them. And it gives the Hobbit its sense of vast depth, that it's connected to a real world. He mentions the necromancer who lives down south. He mentions the high elves and the deep elves and the sea elves without ever explaining what they are. And that creates this illusion of depth. Now, that depth was there because of the Silmarillion material, but no readers of the Hobbit saw that material for 40 years. And that's very important. Let me also bring in then the ring, because that's allowed Bilbo to get this far, but I've been holding off on it because it's very important to see where it comes from. Remember, it's originally an equalizer, but Bilbo does get it from someone. He gets it from Gollum. And Gollum is one of the most difficult characters to understand in The Lord of the Rings, but also in The Hobbit. He's just Gollum. What is he? He seems to have come from this poem that Tolkien wrote called The Glip, about a strange creature that lived in a cave and ate the bones of sailors after they'd been killed in shipwrecks. And originally, Gollum offers to give Bilbo the ring. This blows people's minds when they read it, because they're like, what, he gave Bilbo the ring? How did that work? Well, Tolkien hadn't figured out how the ring worked yet. And so he just thought that Gollum had lost the ring, Bilbo had found it, Gollum offered to give it to Bilbo after the riddle game. When Bilbo wins and Gollum can't find the ring, then Gollum shows Bilbo the way out voluntarily, keeping apologizing. This became a huge problem for Tolkien when he wanted to write The Lord of the Rings, and he decided that the ring was dangerous and important. But in 1951, he had a chance to do a new edition of The Hobbit, and he completely rewrote the chapter, and then tried to explain it in The Lord of the Rings, which I'll go into in the next lecture. The important point here is that Tolkien adds in this idea with Gollum of someone, not just a monster, but someone with an identity that Bilbo could feel sorry for. Bilbo definitely feels sorry for Gollum, even in the early version, much less in the late version when it talks about his endless time in the dark and so forth. And that sorrow and kindness is another element that's unusual to the adventure story. Maybe not so unusual to the children's story, but unusual to the adventure story. What's also unusual to the adventure story is what happens in the way that the dragon is defeated. Bilbo does not kill the dragon. Bilbo does not fight with the dragon. All that Bilbo does is notice the dragon has a hole in his armor in his left breast. That information then goes to Bard the Bowman, who's a much more typically Beowulfian hero. And when Smaug is burning down the town of the Lake Men, Bard shoots the dragon and kills it. This is, again, a real departure from the standard fantasy story or the standard heroic story, and it allows Tolkien to make the end of The Hobbit really very sophisticated, and I'll have to admit very difficult for a lot of kids to try to understand what's happened. Because Bard, as the slayer of the dragon, has a claim on the treasure. A legitimate claim. The dwarves have a claim on the treasure because Smaug stole it from them, but he also stole treasure from other people and mixed it in.